Gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. Today is Thursday, September 14th, 2017. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in Northwest Pennsylvania. Joe Hagmann, your co-host here, along with John Robertson, filling in for Doug Hagmann, as he did last night and will do tonight and tomorrow night, as Doug is in Branson at the True Legends Conference. I couldn't think of the name there for a second. We got a really fantastic show lined up for you today. Dark journalist Daniel List will be joining us in the first hour, followed by Carl Gallops with the announcement of his new book, Gods and Thrones, which comes out in just a few days or weeks. He'll be joining us for hours 2 and 3. Real quick, just a couple of pieces of news, and I'm going to toss it to John for an announcement and thank you to our audience. North Korea launched another missile today, apparently over Japan, from what I've been reading, leaving fears for World War III on the rise, according to Drudge. We've seen this happen before. We don't know what the U.S., when they'll react, if it's going to take an actual strike. Somebody asked a military strategist on Fox the other day, why don't we shoot the missiles down? And the answer to that was, we learn a lot from the missile launches, the kind of missiles, the capabilities that they employ with those missiles, and their flight paths and trajectories. They can, apparently, this according to the strategists, they say that they can learn a lot from monitoring and watching those missile launches. So we'll see what comes with that. Also tonight, Ben Shapiro is going to be in Berkeley as unprecedented measures at Berkeley for conservative writer's speech. Ben Shapiro is taking place today with the police rolling in roadblocks, shutting off large sections of Berkeley and buildings around it, inside the college campus. And the 20-year ban on police using pepper spray on protesters was lifted by the city council this week. The police also said anybody with weapons or wearing a mask would be arrested immediately. So that starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time tonight, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. We're going to be bringing Daniel List on in just a few minutes, but first, I'm going to toss it over to John. He's got a few things to say.
Well, Joe, thank you so much, and greetings and God's blessings to all of you. Thank you for spending some of your valuable time with us this evening. All day long, I've been thinking about our first hour guest last night, Christian Saucier, a former petty officer first class in the United States Navy, 11 years service, 5 in fast attack subs, and 2 deployments to war zones. And this gentleman stood literally on the front line and in a submarine for all of us. And we have decided, Doug Hagmann, Joe, and myself, that we are going to adopt his case as a Hagmann investigative exclusive. I spent time on the phone with Christian today, as well as with Doug Hagmann. And in the next couple of weeks, we'll be going through sort of a discovery process. It'll be primarily Christian and Doug Hagmann interviewing offline, and what we're going to bring to all of you in about 2 weeks. The show date will be dictated by the procedures and protocol, but it will be a 2-hour point-by-point investigation. We need to take this case, tear it apart, and analyze particularly a couple of areas that really need some examination.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting areas to his story where certain things seem to have happened, and then because of those happening, we have him getting in trouble the way he got in trouble. And folks, if you didn't listen to it, go back and listen to last night. John did a great job of getting him on the show, and we're going to get to the bottom of the story when he's scheduled to come back on, when my father Doug's here, so we can ask him some questions and get a much better understanding of what really happened, because there are certain areas of his story that are pretty strange. The and we don't have to get into it tonight, folks. Go back and listen to yesterday's interview. It was really good. And last 45 minutes of the first hour, he was on, and it's definitely worth the listen. We're going to be joined by Daniel List, the dark journalist Daniel List, soon. But you want to jump in before we...
I did. Thank you, Joe. And we're very much looking forward to... Whenever dark journalist stops by, it's always such a treat. But first off, I want to make the request to all of you again. And I want to say thank you to all of the Hagman listeners who went to HagmanReport.com, clicked on the link that enables direct help to the Saucier family. Look, the reality is this. We've all been down and out before. And they are a proud family. They're a military family, but they're close to broke. Christian just got out of federal custody 7 days ago, and he's facing 7 months of house arrest and can't even begin to look for a job until the 7 months of house arrest concludes. However, he remains incredibly positive. His family comes from a Baptist background. They've got a 2-year-old daughter. You can see her picture at HagmanReport.com. Folks, just quickly, go to tonight's show write-up. The title is Rediscovering America, Dark Journalist and Carl Gallups. And I just inserted a couple paragraphs reminding all of you who the Saucier family are. And if you click on the first or the third link in those paragraphs, it will take you to a page where, if you're able, even donating $1 or $5, it's literally putting groceries in their home. And of course, equally important, being willing to share it on your Facebook and or Twitter. Maybe you don't have $5, but maybe somebody else on your Twitter feed does. So, I personally donated last night. I know Doug Hagman did this morning. We're just asking for your help, as Team Hagman. We're going to continue to investigate this story. We feel that a great wrong was committed against a valuable, member of the United States Navy, and in the nuclear fast attack subforce, no less. So go to HagmanReport.com if your heart dictates such. Please help out the family a little bit, and those links are right there. Just click the links. Thanks.
Yeah, and again, thank you, John, for getting him booked on the show. As you said yesterday, his mother and wife were giving a lot of the interviews because he was incarcerated, and it was great to see him on the show. And thank you to everybody from the Hagman audience who did donate and continues to share that link so other people can as well. Well, we're going to bring on our first hour guest. Dark journalist Daniel List is our guest. He's been on a number of times in the past, got tremendous insight, and if I understand this right, we're going to be talking about some interesting information out of Egypt that he discovered. Is that correct, Daniel? Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here. How you doing?
Sorry for the messed up intro. I was talking to John, and then I said your name, but it's great to have you back.
Oh, no problem at all. It's great to be here. And it's interesting about Egypt. I think that's the last one, and there's a quick update on that, which is that great find that Carmen Bolter looked into. She's doing a documentary on, and basically she found a number of these fascinating archaeological, really about 12,000 BC, where a lot of them were dated at, but they're Egyptian artifacts in Turkey. So that's something that she's working on, and I will give you more updates on that as we get them.
Okay.
And I do think that, we're in the fall season, so we're in the fall political deep state season.
Hey, expand on that. What do you mean when you say the fall political deep state season?
Well, there's no question that fall is that real hardcore time when all the major foundations, and the UN and all these people get together. And after the summer, it's that summer vacation. They make the deals behind closed doors.
The end of the fiscal year also for corporations and whatnot in October.
Right, absolutely. And I think largely the discussions that they're having are about how they weren't able to unseat Trump and really shake down his administration in the first part of the year. And what's interesting about that is they really tried from a number of different angles. And what they were able to do were eliminate a number of his lieutenants. But as it turns out, he's still standing. And he actually has a chance here to rebound as far as his poll numbers and some of the other things that have happened in terms of the media coverage on him. So You know, we see him making deals with Democrats and stuff like that, and a lot of that is for show to pressure his own guys because, and I'm calling the Republican Congress his own guys, but really, they aren't really his own guys. I guess you could think of Trump more as an independent. And so these Republicans in Congress have really thwarted him even more than the Democrats, and I think this is his way of doing some kind of jujitsu and going behind their back and saying, you know, I'm going to make these deals with the Democrats if you guys don't come around, because they stiffed him, even though they had both houses. And I guess it's kind of a pretty major shock to get this late into a first year of a presidency and not have any legislative accomplishments. And I think that's really by design.
You know, Daniel, couldn't agree with you more. In fact, after the show, yesterday evening, we were sort of wrapping things up around here, and Joe and I were discussing this, and he's being blocked on Capitol Hill, more or less, from the Never Trumpers and, of course, from the DNC machine. And whereas I think he's kept his overall, what we would in Hollywood call the Q factor, his likability, that which got him elected, I think he's managed to keep that intact in spite of the revolving door at 1600. But two questions for you. First off, and probably the most important, what piece or pieces of legislation must he absolutely mitigate and make happen? That's number one. And number two, when you mentioned the fact that they have successfully taken out a number of his lieutenants, where do we stand there? Are we better off perhaps without a few? And how do you feel about their replacements?
Well, it's pretty interesting. As far as the legislation goes, the tax reform, he could really do something there. And I think it could be dramatic. And, you know, he is the corporate guy. He is the business guy. He should be able to go in there. These are Republicans. They should be all about cutting taxes and restructuring the tax lineup there. It shouldn't be the situation of, oh, they're at loggerheads. They can't get it passed the way they did with Obamacare. Obamacare was more complex, but certainly in the long run, he's going to have to create another platform and replace Obamacare with it, because he was all about repeal and replace. That's what he ran on. So if you look at it, you know, in the classic kind of Reagan-esque terms of when you run on these things, you have to fulfill them. Reagan was able to get tax legislation covered and tax cuts put into place. And these are the kind of things that we're going to need, because, you know, we have companies like Alibaba and Amazon, and Jeff Bezos talking about automation, which is great, and it's true, the technology's there. But everywhere you turn, from driverless cars to robot bartenders and the rest of the things that automation brings, you're eliminating jobs on the ground. And, you know, right off the bat, they just approved these 25,000 driverless cars in California. So that's a whole industry there that you're going to be throwing out. So the kind of hardcore impact from that will be seen over about 18 to 26 months. You know, once we get into that second year, it's going to be pretty major. And so you're looking at less employment that way. So they're going to have to do something with taxes to stimulate more job creation, more companies, more small businesses. This was what Trump was all about. And they've really taken him off that course by making him fret about Robert Mueller and his friends. And this was the design, which was, once they realized they couldn't keep him out of office, I think once he's in office, they have to hamstring him and get him into a point where he has to make deals. And we know that Mueller is striking out in terms of the Russia connection, but what he's doing now is looking into Trump's business, which is really largely unrelated to the Russian probe. So this is going to be a hit job from the inside, because they're going to need to, you know, Trump is such a bull in a china shop, I think it's very hard for them to get his attention and to slow him down. And I think that the point that they're trying to get at is they want to get to the end of the year and not give him any legislative accomplishments, so they can say, well, this idea of putting an independent guy who's good at business didn't really work. And I think both sides will agree on that. You know, the Republicans and the Democrats seem to be, leading up to the election, not wanting Trump to get in. And really, the people have to stand up, and, you know, Trump has to get on that bully pulpit and reach directly to them and saying, I'm trying to do this. You have to put pressure on Congress. And, you know, the last person who was really good at that was Reagan. And I think he has to adopt a lot of that Reagan strategy.
Indeed. You know, it's occurred to me over the last couple of evenings, Daniel, that we have 62 million Americans who essentially put Donald Trump in office. Now, the numbers may skew a little bit one direction or the other, but 62 million, we can agree, is a significant mandate. And I think the 62 million know what they don't like about the country and what they didn't like about the Obama administration, but I'm not sure that those 62 million know what they want from President Trump. And I'll take that even a step further and bounce it back to you. I feel like America needs to rediscover her spirit. I think that the honeymoon is over. The 62 million people who voted for Trump now have realized, okay, we've got President Trump. I also, my personal observation is that I think Trump has had a little bit of a difficult time finding his sea legs. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on the spirit of America today? I mean, look at the optics. We see on one side of the country, the Cajun Navy, all races, all ethnicities helping one another out in a real time of danger. You look at the other side of the country, Berkeley, et cetera, Antifa, the violence, proclaiming peace through violence. I mean, this is madness. What's your take on the spirit of the country here as we wrap up President Trump's first year?
Well, you hit it right on the head, actually, which is that it's the whole point of Trump is that he's a focal point around voter anger towards the system. And that was a lot of what was going on. Even the Bernie Sanders rise against Clinton in the primaries was about that, too. And honestly, I think if an independent style candidate didn't get in, we'd be looking at a much more fractured society because it was there and it couldn't be denied. I think that you're right about Trump in that he has had a difficulty implementing the position. It's a lot easier to say, this is what I'm going to do as president, and then you get in there and you're hamstrung by all these different things. And just being kind of an alpha guy and a CEO guy, he expects to be able to pick up a phone and make it happen. So it's a lot trickier. But I do feel like he's making smarter moves. I do feel even like this thing with the Democrats is a little bait and switch. You know, trying to work with them and scare the Republicans that he'll do deals with them and make them look good with him, and they'll be left out in the cold and then bounced out in 2018 elections. So there is some strategizing that he's doing. In terms of the overall spirit of the country, I think that there's a terrible lack of civility in American culture that's grown over the past 5 years in particular. And I think some of it is by design, honestly, when I see the way that the media networks are pushing different narratives. And I've always felt that, you know, we're looking at corporations who would largely like to see the United States balkanized into 5 or 6 different sectors. And I think that they push for that, and they push for, you know, this kind of divisive stuff while they're working in the background with lobbyists and getting all the stuff passed that is really hard to believe. But I think to get right to the point of it, how do we address it? Trump needs to wrap himself around this America First idea. He needs to get on the ground and create these job programs. He needs to really, you know, he was doing some of that when he was just reaching out and saying, keep your workers here, you know, that kind of thing, and building a spirit of America. Really has to be done, and it's not a kind of cliche patriotism in this case, because the American Foundation and the principles in the Constitution are some of the best things that have ever, you know, mankind's ever created. So therefore, you know, reigniting that spirit, I think, is really his job. He can use that bully pulpit, and he hasn't used it as much around this because I think he has been distracted by the, you know, the attacks and all the different things that have gone on with the administration. In terms of the people who put him in office, I think that they are still in there with him, but they're going to have to realize that it's not going to happen on its own, you know. And you hear some sneaky things in the background about a constitutional convention because, you know, order is breaking down and we can't get certain things accomplished and there's too much gridlock. And this is kind of the Davos crowd solution because the Constitution is really the only thing that America has that can get us back on track, because it's a legally binding document, but it also has impact of, you know, it's almost the result of the Greeks and the society that they made. There's a lot of ideals in it, and that's exactly, I think, what we need to rally around to get the country through. And so once we get to 2020, you know, there's two possible futures, I think, there, where one of them is this kind of automated, corporate-controlled, divisive, media-run situation, or this real breakthrough that Trump ran on, which was rediscovering the spirit of the country, securing the borders, you know, giving up on the globalization, giving up on the empire, and really concentrating on growing the populace and really making the populace dynamic and getting them the good jobs, getting them the education. This is something I think he can definitely fulfill, because he, that's the spirit that he came in with.
Yeah, Daniel, I agree with a lot of what you said. And we do see, and we've been talking about this a lot lately, the battles that are ongoing inside of the White House with that Trump is facing, not only with people within the inner circle, but the different forces and powers. We got the Senate and the House. They're not, you know, accomplishing anything. We got midterm elections coming up. The media just never ends with their craziness against Trump. And here we have an economic issue where we're getting reports that job numbers are stronger, which I'm always skeptical about how they calculate the job numbers. We're getting reports that there is confidence, and we see that in the stock market, that there's confidence in our economy, but we continue to see the debt above $20 trillion. They say it's going to go up another trillion here very shortly. And we see the lagging on the tax cuts, especially for the middle-class Americans, which is one of the main, as you said, one of the main platforms that he ran on. And I know you kind of covered this a little bit, but do you see him laying out the tax cuts before the end of the year, and or involving Congress in that process also, or do you think he should just do that himself, and do you see it before the end of this year? And then anything else do you think that he really needs to get done before we reach, you know, the Thanksgiving and Christmas season, before the end of the year?
Oh my God, he has to get some legislation passed.
Yeah.
Executive orders are great, right? But when it comes down to it, that's a president's legacy, is what he does.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. He's looking at a short window here. And I think what's happened is, by moving into talking a deal with Chuck Schumer, which is kind of remarkable, but the kind of thing that he would do on that is scare the Republicans around the whole immigration thing, that he'll do this big deal without them. And so they'll want to do a deal around taxes and really get the tax cuts in place, and taxes that are favorable to businesses coming here, lowering corporate taxes and bringing in jobs. That was his whole plan. Well, if that was his plan was all about, let's try it and see if it works. There's a strategy in there, which is grow your way out of the debt. If that's the strategy he wants to put in place, then you're going to need a lot more jobs. You're going to need a lot more small business investment, and you're going to need wages to rise. So you're going to need people on the ground feeling that. I think what's happening instead is a lot of people are pledged on the Republican side not to support Trump, because a lot of them come out of that deep state milieu, and their job. Just like Paul Ryan, let's remember, as late as October of the election, didn't support Trump going into the presidency. You know, he backed off and wouldn't support him. And he was off and on through the whole primary season anyway. So these are not natural allies. As a matter of fact, you know, I was going to say, if they don't pass the legislation by the end of the year, Trump should come in to 2018 and say, I'm an independent. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. How do you like that? That's something, you know, which would really shake them up, because they're going to need something, because these Republicans standing around after everybody put them in office, holding both houses and the presidency and not accomplishing anything, is shocking. And so I don't blame Trump for doing this kind of side thing with the Democrats. Now, interestingly enough, we have to ask ourselves, what is all the resistance to firming up the border in the first place? Why is there a problem with that? I mean, any country would have a secure border. What exactly is going on there? And so we have to break it up two ways. you could say the Democrats largely like the immigrant population coming in large numbers in this illegal way. I'm not talking about normal, regular, legal immigration, but the illegal immigration across the borders, because they can turn them into voters eventually and, you know, dependents in their system. And then the Republican side, you could say, well, there's corporate-minded, fiscal-style Republicans who are really into having these undocumented workers for low wages for different projects. But I still don't think those are good enough reasons. And my own conclusion after looking at it and studying the work of people like Gary Webb and Peter Dale Scott is that there's drug running that happens through those borders. And if you really jack up security or build a wall along those borders, you're going to block a lot of that drug trafficking that comes into the country. And a lot of the banks benefit from that money. And I think they're largely behind the lobbying on that.
And you mentioned the drug thing real quick. You know, putting up a wall will definitely stop people who have found gaps where they can, you know, row some drugs on a boat over the river. If you build up walls in areas where there is a lot of that border hopping and throwing stuff over the border.
Now they're using drones.
Yeah, using drones. But let's remember, NAFTA played a huge part in the Mexican ability to smuggle drugs into the country, into America. At the time when the drug wars with the Latin American nations were over, Mexico kind of took over, and once NAFTA was signed through, the floodgates opened up for them. Now, you know, and this is something Trump was good at when he got in. He got us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He got us out of the Paris Climate Accord. And NAFTA was another one he was going after, and he talked about even renegotiating it. But we haven't heard anything from him on this. And this is something that I believe he can do with executive action. But at the same time, it was passed, if I remember correctly, by the House, Senate, and signed by Bill Clinton into law. So maybe he would want to see some action and legislation on that. But either way, he can take action. The wall. Do you think that we actually need a big physical wall? Or are you of the mindset like we are, where you need to beef up your technology down there, beef up some personnel? Yes, you have walls and big fences that people can't get across all across there. I guess smart policing versus just a blanket wall. Or do you think the wall is symbolic to the American people?
Well, I actually think it's more like the former, because there are areas that are significant in terms of how people get across the border illegally. It's obvious. And there are technological means that you can employ that are just as effective. And, you know, the whole idea of an electronic fence in certain areas makes perfect sense. And it's probably a lot less expensive, frankly. But you can't, you know, we can't imagine a Great Wall of China across the border with Mexico. And I think that there is some kind of imagery around that with Trump, because he needed it for the election and the campaign. It was symbolic, you're right. But I think the idea is pretty simple, which is, you know, there aren't enough jobs in America to sustain people coming in across the border in great numbers illegally. We can process people through immigration normal channels, and they can come into the system that way. To have a great number of illegal immigrants coming into the country doesn't make any sense. So it destabilizes the financial system, it destroys the economic balance, and it makes it a lot tougher for low-income people looking for work. It's very simple. And then, you know, you have other situations that don't make sense, where we have people, you know, where we subsidize on the other end, like Walmart, for example, who are hiring people at such low wages that they have to get food stamps. So the government is subsidizing them. But basically what they're doing is paying Walmart's tab, because they're not paying enough people in the first place. So there's kind of a readjustment here that needs to be looked at. The corporations have really taken over. I mean, if you look at the numbers over the last 20 years, they've destroyed so many mom-and-pop shops and brick-and-mortar stores, and it continues to happen. And that's just a new kind of economy coming in. There are ways and means that we can get around it. Certainly things like 3D printing, for example, would be fantastic ways to bring manufacturing back to America. But you're going to need a really robust plan, and people on the Republican side can't be just wed to their deep state interests to make sure Trump fails, because they should be in there backing him to the hilt right now, because he's got both houses. He's only going to have both houses through the fall of 2018. because the Democrats might just get them both back if this continues. So in real terms, somebody's playing a game of stalemate over there, and they're trying to hamstring Trump. And what I find interesting is, you know, two of the major obstacles with Trump were Comey and now Mueller, both FBI directors, Mueller being the second longest serving FBI director during 9/11. But both of them prosecuted the Gambino family. And if you really look at deep state support in the political arena, you see that the mafia end of the deep state supported Trump. And that whole idea that these guys like Mueller, like Comey, were so good, they had credentials of prosecuting the mafia, and that their credentials came from the military contractor side. So that's the real arc end of the deep state. So, you know, Lockheed Martin is where Comey was senior VP, and certainly Mueller has his early military contracts, having been in Vietnam. So I think that we're looking at a little bit of a schism. If we look a little bit under the surface here, Mueller represents an aspect of the deep state that is saying, you know, you have to follow our lead, which is Cold War 2.0 with Russia, which is expansion, military expansion, and empire, increasing the empire. And the other side, which was the Trump side, which I guess you could call the kind of American Association of Manufacturers and that kind of really nationalist block of the deep state. And I include the mafia in that because although the mafia, you know, we look at them as a criminal organization, as a criminal enterprise, they have loyalties and they are used in political campaigns one way or another and for governance. So, you know, I mean, Nixon, and that goes back to Nixon, Kennedy, and Eisenhower, all those guys, there's mafia involvement because they had to deal with this force that was on the ground. And, of course, we've used the mafia from World War II on up and Italian elections, et cetera. So there's this connection there, and it's an uneasy connection for sure. But strangely enough, the mafia side, it really got cheated out during the Obamacare years because they were losing money because Americans were paying money into this system of healthcare that suddenly became very expensive for them personally, and then people didn't have disposable incomes for things like casinos and lotteries and all the rest of it. So there is this clash under the surface that we need to be aware of what's going on. And it's funny to think back of older candidates because Nixon used to joke that he got more mafia money to his aides than Kennedy did. You know, so these people, that's one of the things that they do out there. And I think that Trump largely had an independent ride into the White House because he was self-funded. But those connections around the mafia may have supported him because they knew him from his casino life, from his building in New York. You're not going to get a building up and a tower up in New York without some mafia support behind the scenes somewhere. And so I think we need to be aware of the factors that are going on there. There's an aspect of the military-industrial complex and the deep state aspects around the intelligence community that just wants Trump out. And as a result, you know, they're trying to basically cancel an election. And that's what is really at stake here, which is there's a second invisible governance structure that's battling the voters' will.
Indeed. Our guest this evening is Dark Journalist. And you'll definitely want to visit darkjournalist.com. He posts tons of unique investigative findings. And Daniel, I've always just really liked your style. I started watching your YouTube videos many years ago when you first got started. But if I may, you know, I've been listening intently to your remarks, and I'm thinking that my mind's been back in the Kennedy era, and I remember when JFK got elected, one of the first things he did was this massive across-the-board tax cut, and a few people cried and a few corporate people whimpered and a few really liberal, you know, hand it all out cradle to gravers, balked as well. But it was a very popular move for a president many considered to be too young and too inexperienced for the job. When we look at the first year of President Donald Trump, we've got these two issues that have been on the table here this evening. We've got the wall, in whatever form the wall may come in. And we've got this tax reform concept. Now, Daniel, I've heard you mention the tax thing twice, but only the corporate side of it. And certainly we do need corporate tax reform to bring jobs back after 24 years of globalist motivated job flight to developing nations. I'm sure we can agree on that. My question, Daniel, is this. Does it seem that the wall is the more divisive of the two? In your opinion, if President Trump wants a major victory going into the holiday season, doesn't it make more sense to do whatever it takes to put money back in Americans' pockets? Daniel, how much longer can we exist with the government taking essentially half of what we make?
That's a great point. And to have such a high tax structure at this level of an economy with, you know, the market booming doesn't make any sense at all. There's totally room for a tax cut. And, you know, it's interesting what you said about JFK there, because his quote on the tax cut, which was a brilliant move back then, because it was a pretty stagnant economy in 1960, his quote was, "A rising tide lifts all boats." And it's true. You know, if you do a 25% across-the-board tax cut on every American, then they have more money to invest, they have more money to shop, they have more money to go out to restaurants. The whole economy hums much better with that. Instead of this money disappearing into, you know, this government structure, and we don't appreciate what they do with it, and we can't get the Congress to change their actions, and, you know, they're so intent on renewing all the nuclear weapons by creating Russia as a nuclear enemy at this point, and, you know, we should always have a strong defense, but this overemphasis around, you know, they won't spend $2 trillion renewing our nuclear arsenal. It's just not necessary. So, you know, it's where we spend that money. So I prefer people to have the money to be able to spend it where they want it. And when you look at tax cuts, classically, across the board, they've always helped the economy. They've always stimulated jobs. If you look at the Reagan tax cut, it took a while to kick in, but that's what they called the Reagan recovery at the time, because they were coming out of the Carter era where they had spent so much on social programs and mismanaged them, and there was a lot of fraud with HUD and all these different programs, that it was kind of a grab bag for the government, and all the people were on the ground with inflation, and they had all these a number of things going on that sapped the vitality of the country. And whatever else you can say about the Reagan era, by the time he left, the spirit of the country was through the roof. People were investing. There was, you know, it was kind of an overflow of financial opportunities. And I think that inspiring that kind of spirit, really, a lot of it was because Americans had more of their own money to keep.
Yeah, and we don't see that today. We see, what is it, John, 72% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. That we just talked about that this week or last week. We see, you know, just the continued struggles economically that we have. And as you both have said, the money that's taken out of our check every week, the high taxes we pay on everything we buy from there. I mean, more than half of our income basically is taxed when you have, you know, 40% almost taxed initially when you get your check. Then everything you buy has tax on it and you're paying taxes on taxes.
Absolutely.
It's just crazy. And somebody needs to fix this and get the money back into the hands of the people who need it the most.
Of the people who earned
lower,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. The people who earned it and the people who need it the most are the people who earned it, especially people who are working, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week and, you know, still living paycheck to paycheck.
Let me ask you a question, and I'll pose this, Joe, to yourself and to our guest, Dark Journalist. Does it not seem, gentlemen, like over the past, let's say, decade, everybody's working 60 hours a week? I mean, 40 hours a week is quaint. It's charming. I don't know anybody that works 40 hours a week. Or if they do, they have a spouse that's pulling 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and they're managing a two-income family. I handed that question to both of you. Joe, you want to take it first?
Yeah, you know, there are people who work, I know some people with GE, but, you know, they pick up overtime when they can. So, no, they're not really working 40 hours if they're constantly picking up 10 hours of overtime a week. And I couldn't tell you the last time we worked a 40-hour week ever. But
I couldn't either.
You know, I'm not complaining, at least with what we do. But I'm sure, you know, a lot of people would love to be able to work less and spend more time with their family and be able to do some more of the fun things, you know, take more vacations or be able to afford to take the family out to a nice meal once a month, something like that, where you can get the money back to those people who you took it from in the first place. but also for them to be able to use it to fulfill their life more with them and their family, whether that's saving for retirement or, you know, doing something fun this weekend. But either way, the American public really needs and wants to see a shift back towards the money being worth more, wages being higher, and, you know, benefits and all those things we seem to have lost, especially. And Daniel, I want you to, if you can, comment on this. You know, back when my dad was growing up, and even more so than that, his dad, when you got a job, you know, maybe you weren't making the most money, but at the same time, you had, you know, the 401ks, you had your health care, dental, all that, you know, all the benefits that go along with a full-time job. That's really not around, you know, except maybe in universities and in government and in special, you know, very niche sections of business. But you don't see that too much anymore. Not with most people.
Absolutely not. Well, one of the first things, probably the biggest pox on the economic house of America, the ridiculous housing costs. So, you know, they say the housing market is in recovery. That just means that these houses are being pumped up into this bubble where they're being charged three times as much than they should be. And this is the only routine, it seems, that we know of in America right now to grow an industry, which is pumping up house prices and then crashing the market like it did in 2008. That's not a strategy for the future. That's a very short-term solution. And we know HUD is a very tricky situation because so much of their numbers and, you know, their records are managed by the defense contractors like Lockheed Martin. So it's very hard to get real numbers out of them. So right now we have the Department of Defense, NASA, and HUD with undocumented adjustments of $15 trillion. Now, you know, the nation's $20 trillion in debt. Those $15 trillion that are unaccounted for would pay down three quarters of that. So where is that money? These are the kinds of questions I think we should get into because, you know, NASA's budget has been shrunk, right, to 1965 levels. But there's tons of activity in space. So there's tons of opportunities in space. There's all this privatization of space, you know, space tourism, space mining. There's all this stuff. And obviously that came out of this work and the money that NASA had. So this the fact that they're missing money tells me quite possibly that companies like SpaceX and Bigelow Aerospace, who are putting things out there, are really largely the beneficiary of that missing money. So, you know, this is a very tricky situation because we put so much money into NASA, and it doesn't look like the public is reaping very much reward about it. At least there's a lot of questions there. I think, you know, the DOD with undocumented adjustments, NASA and HUD, those are three very interesting organizations because they all seem to have this kind of secret side. And, you know, it might be time with Trump to really create the type of transparency and saying, I'm going in through all these organizations and creating a gigantic, you know, program to really see where their money's going. I mean, that would help the budget right there.
Daniel, let me just kind of compliment, segue off of your remarks for a moment. Let's take a look at Alaska. I don't purport to have the statistics here in front of me this evening, but we know that citizens of the state of Alaska receive a benefit check because of the oil produced in Alaska. Now, while you were speaking just now, it got me thinking, okay, U.S. tax dollars paid for NASA. Going back to several generations earlier, we paid for the Transcontinental Railroad. We paid for the interstate highway system, and the list goes on and on and on and on to the point where now we're paying for all kinds of things that the government was never designed to be in the business of. Isn't it interesting that the American people never get a little kickback like the people in Alaska do? And that being said, should we?
Oh, I definitely agree. Because, you know, the space part's very interesting too, because there's going to be a real boom out there in space. And everyone on the ground should be aware of it because between suborbital platforms and, you know, Russia has their own GPS now. There's going to be a new one going up there. Different companies are going into space like China and India. And that's a whole different frontier. And there's no question that it's public dollars that built all that, and it really should be something where, you know, the public benefits from it, because it's too easy for this just to become some elite society where we're split across a divide. And if that becomes a digital divide with what's in space, it's going to be a very uneven game on the ground, because in space you have satellites, and they're naturally protected by the Air Force too. So, you know, there are companies on the corporate level who are actually storing data in space, and the idea is no one can get at their data. And we just don't have the rules and the laws on the ground or in Congress or anywhere to address that kind of hiding records or hiding data that could be crucial. So I think that there's, you know, we're going to have to roll into the 21st century with what's going on in Congress, because it's not being addressed. And we're also on the news side being kept in this divisive vibe, and instead of looking at what's actually happening. There's tremendous development in space. You know, we see a lot of reports about a secret space program, which is all about, you know, preparing these different types of economic things like drilling asteroids and things along that line. So, you know, I think the indications are that there's a whole different system happening economically. We've heard many reports about a gigantic underground structure, and, you know, that there's a manufacturing base underground. And, you know, it can't be proven exactly, but certainly there's a lot of substantiation around this whole idea, because whistleblowers have come forward about this for years now. And so, you know, these are the types of questions I think we have to ask. Is there a major manufacturing structure underground? I know that we built a massive underground system during the Cold War. Is that what we're utilizing? And is that where some of these resources are going? And is that in any way connected with the type of work that we're doing building up space? You know, one of the things that Trump did is I'll tell you what's interesting about Trump, and there's a lot of key intelligence in the Trump administration about certain factors that, you know, as an outsider, he's really catching on quick. But he created something called the Space Council. And the Space Council gives Pence control, largely, over NASA and over development in space. So this is him stepping into that arena and saying, yeah, maybe you guys on the deep state side are privatizing space and working with these companies, but I'm reasserting authority over this, and this is going to give me the ability to look into what you guys are doing. So the Space Council is an interesting thing, because it was originally set up under Kennedy, and he appointed Johnson to run it. And it was scrapped after Star Wars and SDI with the Reagan-Bush administration, supposedly, because they didn't want oversight after the Cold War ended, because they wanted to develop this stuff, but, you know, no longer using regular congressional money. They were going to now use the black budget to fund this. So intelligence budgets around that, the secret intelligence budget is classified. We would never know if they were using the money for that or not. So something like Trump's move to develop the Space Council tells me that he has that deft attention to detail, where he's looking at this and saying, huh, a lot of money is disappearing out of the federal budget, and we have massive development in space. I want a piece of it. And I think that's what's happening, and I think that's why he appointed Pence to look into it.
Oh, but that's an excellent analysis, Daniel. I want to kind of switch gears while we only have a few minutes left, maybe 8 minutes left. We have today North Korea launching another missile over Japan in their latest missile launch. And every time they do that, many people, especially the media and many concerned Americans, you know, start to wonder, is this, you know, the next step towards a conflict between North Korea and America? And also, I'd like to talk about the political violence that we've seen, as Ben Shapiro is going to be speaking at Berkeley here tonight, and Milo Yiannopoulos plans a 20-person conservative event there in just a few weeks from today. But let's start with North Korea. How do you see this playing out with North Korea?
It's really it's a bizarre situation, and you know, they've let it go on too long through these different administrations. I read something where the Clinton administration in 1994 said, we'll end the North Korean state if you do anything nuclear against your neighbor there in South Korea. So, you know, we know we've had the Korean War, and to let them go nuclear, I'm not sure what the thinking was there or why they let it happen, but you notice something where, like, there's one subtle mention of a chemical weapon in Syria, and we bomb the hell out of them, right? And then you have North Korea developing every bomb in the world, and people like McCain and stuff are like, well, we really shouldn't mess with North Korea. And so it's very strange. It's like these Republicans and certain leaders in Congress on the Democratic side, they go where the money is, right? And so there's these Middle Eastern wars. There's always position to be gained. Obviously, there's not much to be gained by having a war in Korea, and especially if they're planning to use anything nuclear. I mean, it would be totally absurd, but I think that what the North Koreans have proved is that they're willing to go beyond bluster to the brink. And at the same time, there's a little bit of a narrative here that he's some kind of madman from out of left field, when in fact, you know, he was raised in Europe at a very fancy school. And he was kind of groomed, lived most of his life outside of Korea. So this is not some, like, you know, I mean, he definitely acts like a madman. There's no doubt about it. And I don't trust him at all. But I also think there's probably something sensible going on here where they think if they bring the threat level up very high, they can get a lot of rewards and international respect and all the rest of it. But the idea of having a completely nuclear-armed North Korea with ICBMs facing our coast, I mean, it seems like that's not something that they're going to allow to happen. And if he keeps setting off bombs, this is the other weird thing about them, is they're not that good at these tests. You know, you always hear about these bombs going off sideways, and their last hydrogen bomb that they exploded underground caused an earthquake. So if they keep it up, they're just going to blow themselves up, and they won't be a problem. But I think it's a dangerous situation, you know, really, when you get right down to it. But it is a dangerous situation, and I really think it's China's ball, because China has incredible economic growth, and we're struggling to stay at 3, you know. So they have phenomenal growth, and if there's any kind of nuclear exchange in North Korea, they're the ones who get the blowback there. So it's really their job to get on it. And I think this is what Trump was emphasizing when the Chinese leader was here. So I think a lot of this is cluster.
Daniel, quickly, can you hear me? Is your audio good?
Now you're good.
Okay, perfect. Daniel, we have just a few moments left, and I want to take this this fantastic and intellectually inspiring conversation that we've had this evening, and I want to bring it right back around full circle. We've talked a little bit about almost what I would consider the shadow government, deep state, nudging President Trump, just as they did George W. Bush, just as they did Barack Obama, just as they did Bush Sr., from domestic policies and issues that may or may not make sense to a, quote, wartime president, end quote. So I want to draw this full circle all the way back around. Between now and Christmas, Daniel, is it the wall or is it tax reform? Which one do you think could be done? Which one do you think will be done, if in fact any at all?
If I had to predict it, they're not going to get the wall. They will get some kind of an agreement on immigration. And Trump will do that with the Democrats and make the Republicans look bad. The Republicans will come around and do tax reform. But I think that Trump really better lay it on the line, swing for the fences, do a national, you know, use the bully pulpit, go out there in front of all the three networks, make a national address that's about something, that isn't about moving 4,000 troops into Afghanistan, which doesn't help anybody. You know, go out there and say, we need tax reform, and I'm appealing to you directly, inspire these guys who are in Congress, they won't get on board with me, and Trump needs to bring his personality. Look, he wouldn't have got in without his personality. People like his personality. He needs to bring that front and center, and he needs to reach out to people for help, and he needs to say that it's you and I, it's me and the people, and we have to pressure Congress to do the right thing. That's where, if I was a political consultant, these are the types of things that he would need to do. And I think what's happening is the Republicans in Congress are making a bunch of deal attempts behind the scenes with him and really tying him up, delaying him, and then leaving him with nothing. That doesn't work. So if they think they're going to get reelected on that, they're sorry. They're going to be sorry. Yeah. The other thing I would say is that their donors, are largely behind this effort, I believe, and the lobbyists are largely behind this effort to leave Trump by December with no legislative accomplishments. And if he has to turn to Democrats to get it, he will.
Fantastic, Daniel. We only have about a minute and a half left till our break. Anything on your mind, closing thoughts, anywhere you want to go or didn't get to say that you wanted to get into tonight?
Well, it's great to be back with you guys, and I really appreciate coming on the show. And you've been doing some great shows here in the fall, coming up to the fall, so I've been listening a lot. I just did a show with Alana Freeland on D-Wave, which is something I think people should really look into. And this is this quantum computing chip that has to be kept at this sub-freezing below kind of space temperature. And there are a lot of scientists who are like, you know, laying wreaths and worshiping this thing as a god. And I think we have to get a handle on this innovation and technology, but it's a fascinating subject. And I think it's a good education for everyone to check out that episode.
Absolutely. Folks, our guest for this hour, this first hour on Thursday, September 14th, 2017, is Dark Journalist. DarkJournalist.com. Also, follow Dark Journalist on Twitter. We do. We check his feed regularly, and that's simply at Dark Journalist on Twitter. And in fact, you will see his tweet, CERN, D-Wave, and the Freeman interview. Dark Journalist, thank you so much for joining us this evening on Hagmann Report. We will be in contact, sir.
Great. Have a great night over there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Fantastic. Folks, we'll be right back with Carl Gallups after this. He's got a new book coming out, and we're going to jump into that. Gods and Thrones is the title, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagmann Report on this Thursday, September 14th, 2017. Boy, how time flies. Stay tuned.
Greenovative. Go to HagmannReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. But what Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bing, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.